over at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. I wrote up previews for the first four games here this morning, the games on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then I've got all my Major League Baseball content over there as well. MLB season win total previews all posted, all the future stuff as well. And in fact, I just saw this morning that my MLB betting guide is up as an ebook over at Amazon, $2.99 to get that. I think it's well worth the price. I am a little bit biased, but you can head on over to Amazon, check that out. Even if you don't have a Kindle, there is a Kindle app for Android, iPhone, whatever kind of phone you have. You can get a Kindle app for that and then download the guide, give you another way to get it without clicking through all the different stuff over at bangthebook.com. But however you get it, I just appreciate that you read it. Thank you so much to everybody that's sent positive feedback, sent some positive notes here to my email regarding getting the notes for the bettors box or just about the content itself. So really appreciate that. Incredibly, the season starts here this week over in Japan with Seattle taking on Oakland. So the regular season coming up very, very quickly here, to say the least. That game at 5:30 in the morning Wednesday between the Mariners and Athletics. So I'll write my first MLB betting picks piece sometime on Tuesday with a breakdown of that Mariners and Athletics game. Marco Gonzalez, Mike Fiers there in that one. And then on Thursday, those two teams play again. Yusei Kikuchi will go for Seattle. Oakland has yet to announce who will pitch in that second game. But I'll have my MLB betting picks and tips piece updated over at bangthebook.com for those two games in Tokyo. And then obviously I will reconvene with that on March 28th when everybody else gets started. So keep that in mind here where, some AL West division future stuff or the season win totals for those two teams will be coming off the board. And by the way, Oakland, one of my favorite season win total over bets here for this season. So if you're interested in following along with that, you may want to look that one up sooner rather than later. But I'll try to get as much baseball stuff as I can over the next couple of weeks here on the shows. I'll try to do, maybe a bettors box on Thursday or Friday. I'll do the same thing next week, kind of tie those in with the Christian Pina segments and everything. Again, very, very busy time of year, to say the least. We're trying to fit everything in that we can, both at bangthebook.com and on Bang the Book Radio here. So bear with us. I know the schedule's been a little bit different here of late, but we've got Kyle Hunter on today's show. We'll have Kyle Hunter on Wednesday again as well. On Tuesday's show, we'll have our four handicappers from last week's show on Tuesday. Brian Blessing, Rolf Michaels, Tony George, and Brad Powers. I'll pick one region with each of those guys. We'll go over that, talk about some NIT, CBI, CIT type stuff. So we'll have you fully covered for everything that's going on here. We'll take some time and obviously some extended shows here. But again, fantastic time of year. Very, very exciting time of year. We're not that far away from the NFL draft, so a lot of people are talking about that. And, of course, NBA and NHL playoffs start in about, three or four weeks' time here as well. So very, very busy time of the year. Keep it tuned to bangthebook.com, Bang the Book Radio, and our Bang the Book YouTube page. We'll have you as prepared as we possibly can for all of the stuff that's going on here at this time of the year. All right, I'll start things off with the Monday mailbag here. Got some listener questions that we'll bring Kyle on about 25 after. So if you're looking to fast forward to that segment, move ahead to about 25 minutes into the show here. You should find Kyle at that point in time. But we start things off here with a question from @Seabird_3, longtime listener of the show here. This question for both Kyle and I, so I will check with him when I get him on the air. But he says, I currently have Utah State at 500-1 at my book. If I do take it, how would I go about it? I'm assuming I'd leave it alone now, but what do I do once they face North Carolina? And I will preface this by saying that we're going to get a lot of listener questions about hedging futures here as we go throughout the week. And while I understand why a lot of people want the answers to those questions, because we talk a lot about the futures market, we talk a lot about hedging and money line rollovers and all that type of stuff, it's a very hard question to answer in general because, you have to know what you want to get out of that investment. If you've got something like a 500-1 here, well, you can start hedging it rather quickly. If you've got something like a 40-1, you really got to wait a while on it. And since we don't know exactly how much you bet, what your risk tolerance is, what you're looking to get out of it, it's a very difficult question for us to answer. As a general rule, when it comes to hedging these NCAA tournament futures, obviously the draw is critically important. The location is pretty important as well because you're going to have some teams that do have a home court advantage. Some teams that do have, you know, less travel headaches and things of that sort. You certainly want to factor all of that into the equation. But again, a lot of this is about matchups. A lot of this is about, you know, how these teams set up as they move throughout the tournament here. You know, if you've got a team that's really good on the offensive glass and they're playing a team that doesn't rebound well, well, maybe you don't want to hedge at that point. Maybe you do want to let that ride a little bit. And again, obviously, you're betting a little to win a lot with these futures. So, you know, you want to let them ride as far as you possibly can before you start cutting into that profit, because you start cutting into the profit, all of a sudden, maybe your 100-1 goes down to a 60-1 or a 50-1 or something like that by making a hedge. Well, you make another hedge, you may be down to a 20-1 ticket. So you got to really think these things out and plan ahead. Look at the potential matchups, consider what those lines are going to be, consider what the likelihood is that that team takes care of business in that game, which brings me to this Utah State future where, look, Utah State and Washington, I mean, that's a game that Utah State can very easily win. You know, I mean, you look at this Washington team, they had a bid locked up for the NCAA tournament, but, you know, didn't even get through the Pac-12, got blown out in the championship game by Oregon. That's definitely a good spot for Utah State, who is a 2.5-point favorite here. So getting the 500-1 is very, very attractive. Of course, the obvious problem here is that they play North Carolina. And Utah State would be a significant dog to North Carolina. I'm guessing somewhere in the 8 or 9 point range, something like that. Maybe we'll get a more accurate number from Kyle in the next segment. But yeah, obviously you'd have to put out, you know, 4 units to win 1 unit or so on the money line, maybe even a -450 type of situation, something like that. So that is something you have to consider. Yes, the 500-1 price is very, very attractive, especially with Utah State favored in something that's a little bit more than a coin flip game there against Washington. But what do you do in the second round? Well, I think there are a couple of options here. Some books offer, you know, Team X to make it to the Sweet 16. North Carolina will be a chalky team to do that, but that will be a lower price than their money line in that Utah State game, I would say. So that's one thing that you want to consider if your sports book or your particular local or something like that has that opportunity for you. You know, will North Carolina make the Sweet 16? I'm guessing that's probably somewhere in the -325, -350 range, something like that. Well, that's still going to be lower than the Utah State hedging price to go with North Carolina money line. So that's one option for you. Obviously, too, you know, if you don't like Auburn or Kansas there in that Midwest region, well, you can take North Carolina to make it to the Elite Eight, North Carolina to make it to the Final Four, something like that. You know, obviously, you can also look for a live betting opportunity. And that's something that's really nice about live betting is that let's say that North Carolina comes out flat against Utah State. Let's say that's a game where Utah State leads by 6 or 8 points, you know, midway through the first half or something like that. Boom, there's your hedge right there. You know, you may get North Carolina at that point, -175, -200, something like that, a lot more palatable than laying the 4-1 or the 450-1, something like that, to take North Carolina in that spot. Of course, the problem here is that if North Carolina comes out fast, they're up 10 halfway through the first half, you don't have a hedging possibility at that point. So again, it's part of your risk tolerance profile. It's part of how much gamble you want to have with these futures. But I think that in an instance like this, you know, for Utah State here, you know, they play the earlier game in Columbus, so North Carolina has a little bit shorter of a turnaround. Yeah, Utah State may have to spend some more effort getting past Washington than North Carolina will against Iona. But still, I think that you find yourself in a more advantageous situation to wait for a live hedging opportunity. And it won't always be the case. It won't always work out. But the nice thing is with a 500-1 ticket on Utah State, you can bet a little to win a lot. So your initial investment isn't that much. Would you like to get something out of it? Oh, absolutely. You most definitely would. But if you don't get that opportunity because the game flow doesn't work out in a favorable way, it is what it is. You know, that's part of the gambling process. That's part of playing these futures and diversifying your portfolio in that regard. But for me, that's what I would do. You know, if you like a team that's got a 500-1 position or 250-1 or 100-1, something like that, I don't think you should hedge automatically. I think you should wait and see how the game flow plays out. See if you get a better live money line price. Now, of course, you know, look, if you're somebody who's playing big amounts of money, you know, and you're kind of limited with what you can get down from a live betting standpoint, then maybe this strategy isn't for you. But I think for a lot of our listeners out here who are feeling out their way in the business, who are hopefully increasing their betting sizes from listening to Bang the Book Radio here, you're probably not moving max limit bets with live, you know, live betting opportunities. So I think that's the play that I would look to make in a situation like that. Wait and see if you can get a better money line price on North Carolina. And also, too, I mean, look, let's say Utah State does pull the upset in that game. You know, so instead of cutting into your future with a minus 400, minus 425, minus 450, whatever the case may be, you cut into it with a minus 200. You know, you've got more profit potential as you move forward. Because the problem for Utah State, in a perfect world, we say that our 500-1 goes live into the Sweet 16. They do knock off North Carolina. Well, then they play either Auburn or Kansas, probably. Well, maybe New Mexico State knocks off Auburn. Maybe we get a little bit fortunate there. But that's the thing. You know, you're not just looking to hedge Utah State in that North Carolina game. You have to hedge at every spot after that because they're going to be an underdog in every spot after that. So you have to factor that into the equation here, and that's why it's more advantageous for you to get a minus 150, minus 175, minus 200 live as opposed to paying that big pregame price because you have to keep hedging that future for as long as it stays live because Utah State is a good team but in a precarious position against the North Carolinas, the Auburns, the Kansases, and hell, even if they got past that, against the Houstons and Kentuckys of the world. So you know, you want to, you know, I guess another thing you can do theoretically, you could take a North Carolina position, although there's not a whole lot of equity in that one right now. You could take a North Carolina position as a hedge against Utah State. But again, you know, as the games increase in importance, as we get fewer and fewer teams in this field, well, then you've got to start thinking about other hedging possibilities. So again, I think for anybody that's out there that has a question about hedging a futures ticket, I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, you'd probably rather wait for a live betting opportunity to take advantage of that. I know I had a listener question, I believe, about an Iowa State future, I think 125-1, that, you know, same thing. You know, I think they're in a pretty good spot against Ohio State here this weekend. They are a 5.5-point favorite on Friday. Well, then what happens after that? Do they get Houston? Does Georgia State pull the upset? We don't know. But I think I would let that one ride here at least into the Sweet 16, hoping that they can get past Houston. You know, for Iowa State playing their best basketball at the best time of the year, get a pretty favorable draw being in Tulsa as well, so they get to stay in the Midwest. These are all factors. These are all considerations that you want to keep in mind, is that, you know, you want to look at the draw, look at the matchups, consider what prices you're going to have to lay to hedge against that future and decide if it's worth it. And it's a broad brush blanket statement. I know people are going to ask us about specific teams, and please do. I'm not saying I don't want those questions. I'm just saying that they're very hard to answer because it's dependent on the bettor. It's dependent on your risk tolerance, your initial position, and what you want to get out of that bet. But I would say that you shouldn't cut into your potential profit if you don't have to. You know, if you feel like, you know, your futures bet is going to be a wire-to-wire loser in that game, then maybe you do it pregame. But I think that with live betting and with so many opportunities that are out there now, I would just wait and see if I have to hedge it. You know, you may get into a situation where there's 4 minutes left in the game. It's a two-point game, something like that. Maybe the money line to hedge is minus 125. Maybe it was minus 225 or 250 before the game. That's an advantageous situation to you as a bettor. That's a plus EV type of situation. If it works out for you, if it comes in your favor. So you're adding a little bit of gamble to your gamble, but also I think at the end of the day, you know, you're doing something I think is smart for the future of that bet. Because again, you have to think of it as you have to be proactive, I think, instead of reactive. You know, I think you react. I think a lot of people make reactionary pregame bets where maybe they didn't have to, maybe they're worried about a team. Maybe they, you know, heard something from a talking head, something like that. I think you'd be proactive during the game as opposed to proactive before the game, and you hope that those opportunities present themselves. And obviously, as you get deeper into the tournament, you know, the Elite Eight types of rounds, stuff like that, at that point, I think maybe you change your mindset some. Maybe you do look to hedge a little bit partial pregame and then look to maybe double down during the game, something like that. But I think in these early rounds, I don't hedge unless it's absolutely necessary. I think it's only necessary from an in-game context in a lot of ways. So appreciate the question, C-Verd. I'll check with Kyle Hunter and get his thoughts and see what he thinks about that question as well. At CapperT1211 was the one who asked about the Iowa State future. I would definitely wait through the Ohio State game. I think Iowa State's in a decent spot there against the Buckeyes. After that, obviously, Houston's a very, very strong team. But again, that's one of those games where I don't think the line is too out of whack, and it may be a back-and-forth game in the first half. So I would just wait. I would wait and see if I need to hedge that in an in-game context as opposed to cutting into some of my potential profit with something before the game. At Kez2109 says, any thoughts on the different projection methods on FanGraphs, especially for fantasy baseball? This is a good question. I talked a lot about Pecota and the things that drive Pecota, how it's more based on defense. It's based on some of the proprietary metrics that Baseball Prospectus has over there. It was something that people kind of freaked out about, especially with relation to the Cubs. The Cubs are going to be worse, I think, this year. The reasons why they're going to be worse may not line up with what Pecota is telling you. Now, when you look at individual player projections over at FanGraphs, there are several projection systems that are there. Dan Zimborski's Zips projections are over there. Steamer's done projections for a long time. Depth Charts is a combination of Zips and Steamer with the FanGraphs staff allocating playing time. So Depth Charts has a little bit more of a guess and check type of model to it because they're trying to – the thing about Depth Charts is this. They set a baseline of X number of innings, X number of plate appearances, and then divide them up amongst the players that are expected to make the team, expected to have a big role, expected to be bench guys, etc. So depth charts can be a little bit different from Zips and Steamer in that Zips and Steamer are exclusively computer projections. Depth charts has some human influence to it in terms of the allocation of playing time. Another one is Derek Carty's The Bat, which I've seen a lot of talk about The Bat. Saris has been talking a lot about it on Twitter. He's been writing about it over at The Athletic. I will tell you that I don't know all of the individual intricacies of these projection systems. I know that Zips and Steamer have been around for a very long time. The Bat is a relative newcomer to the projection department over at FanGraphs. And, I think that you probably want to just survey all of them. Take a look at what all of them have to offer. It was that kind of look around here at them this morning. There's not a whole lot of deviation from projection system to projection system. But, for me, too, I also want to, go look at the player pages myself, look at exit velocities, look at launch angle year over year, look for guys that are, actively making changes to where you can maybe find some good values out there. The good batters are going to be the good batters no matter what. The good pitchers are going to be the good pitchers almost exclusively across the board. How you win fantasy leagues, how you win season win total bets and stuff like that is finding the inefficiencies on each individual team. So those are the types of things you want to look at. Also, look for trendy guys, whether they're talking about them at FanGraphs, RotoGraphs, whether they're talking about them at different sites. Guys like a Max Kepler, who everybody's falling in love with this year because he improved his average exit velocity and his launch angle from 2017 to 2018. Try to get some of those guys. Try to look at some of the advanced metrics because in a lot of your fantasy leagues, you're not going to have a lot of people doing that. They're going to be looking at the traditional Triple Crown numbers and the counting numbers and all that. Look for some of the underlying metrics that can give you an edge on those guys that maybe had a down year or something like that. But, Zips and Steamer, to go back to the original question, are probably the two most trusted out there because they're the two that have been around the longest. I think the Bat, does have a lot of important things to it, and I think that it's nice to see somebody challenging Zips and Steamer in that arena. At the end of the day, I think all these projection systems are pretty similar across the board, but that's what I would look at. I would look at the guys that are getting buzz, the Paul Sporers and the Jason Collettes and the Justin Masons are talking about on Twitter, guys that may be undervalued in your league because, the other people in your league don't view baseball in the same way. And you're going to have a lot of guys, a lot of recency bias, guys that had great second halves. Herman Marquez for the Rockies is one guy that I see getting drafted very, very high. I like the strikeout numbers. I love what he did in the second half, and I was ahead of the train on him looking at some of his advanced metrics and whatnot, but he's being taken very early in a lot of drafts. He still pitches in Coors Field. You know, he still has that really bad park factor that he has to contend with. And keep park factor in mind. It's very, very important to keep park factor in mind. You know, guys that hit in more advantageous hitting environments should be drafted higher in your leagues. You know, there are some guys that are very good hitters that are in bad ballparks. Well, it's tough to take those types of guys sometimes. So, you know, for those that are doing their fantasy baseball drafts, go through and, you know, look at my betting tips articles over at bangthebook.com. Look at my season win total write-ups and previews. You'll find some guys I'm talking about that are probably going to have some value in those fantasy leagues for you. But again, as far as the original question goes, Zips and Steamer have been around the longest. They're probably the most trusted. But I know Eno Saris has been talking a lot about the bat, a guy whose baseball opinion I respect possibly more than anybody else in the baseball media. So the bat's certainly one that you want to look at as well. A couple of questions here from Rich Lammons, our good buddy on Twitter. He says, in all your prep work that you do for the NCAA tournament, how many times do you listen or watch One Shining Moment? To be honest with you, very rarely. You know, I see it when it comes across on TV as a commercial. I don't actively go out of my way to find it. But you know what? Also, too, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm always honest with my listeners here. As great as March Madness is, and it's a lot of fun, and I love these moments, these Cinderella stories, the Loyola Chicago's, you know, the Florida Gulf Coast, things of that sort. I love talking about March Madness, but you know, obviously it's the NIT, CBI, and CIT that I really try to focus on. I own my personal handicapping and my personal bankroll, because there are so many more opportunities there. So March Madness is great. We're going to talk about it because a lot of people want to hear about it. A lot of people want to hear about, you know, who we like for brackets and stuff like that. But, man, if you want to make money, you're looking at NIT, CBI, CIT. I can't stress that point enough, because motivation means so much for the NIT. So many travel situations in the CBI and the CIT. You know, these athletic departments are funding from their own pockets for the CBI and the CIT. So there's a little more incentive there for those teams. Whereas for the NIT, you know, you can have big motivation discrepancies, much like bowl season, where teams just, they're not in it. You know, whether they were snubbed for the NCAA tournament or whatever else, they're just not in it. So good opportunities in those postseason tournaments. One Shining Moment is great. I hope we get a Cinderella story this year. I hope that everybody makes a ton of money, but I don't go out of my way to find it, truthfully. Rich also says here, for a while, I've been trying to think of a way to compare lines from live wagering to the closing line, and I've come up empty because I don't think there is a straight comparison, as in-game injuries and blowouts, among other factors, can't be accounted for in pregame handicapping that would affect the line. Right now, the only comparison I have is to track the record of wagers that are pregame compared to live, if I see constantly finding value in making live plays. Any additional thoughts or recommendations on a way to compare live lines to closing lines? Quite frankly, no. I mean, it's one of those things where the live betting interfaces are getting a lot better. I think they're still behind the times a little bit, especially because they're so algorithmic. And I've mentioned this before on the show, but you know, a lot of times they're relative to, you know, that closing line, how much time is left in the game. And they don't deviate a whole lot from that. You know, you can find opportunities with foul trouble, you know, bullpen usage in baseball. You know, maybe if you can catch a live line in hockey before a power play starts, something like that. You know, it's tough because pregame, you've got all the odd screens. You've got so many resources for finding out what those closing lines are. And for live betting, you know, these numbers could be all over the map. They could definitely be all over the place. So I think it's very, very tough to, you know, find a consensus with those. You know, I mean, I guess if you're comparing from one book to the same book from a live line standpoint, you've got some opportunities there, but there's just so much variance. There's so much going on in the live betting world and in the live betting landscape that I don't think that there's really a way to compare that. But I do think that, you know, being on the lookout for live betting opportunities, very, very important here in March Madness at every time of the year, because you can find a lot of really positive EV situations. That's really all we're looking to do. You know, all we're looking to do is find an edge, play it, and hope it works out. That's what this business is. You're playing your edges when you get them. You're playing them for a bet size that you're comfortable with and hoping that they work out. You know, and it is a variance-ridden industry for a lot of people. You know, but proper bankroll management matters so much. And again, when you talk about live betting, it can be a slippery slope too. You know, a lot of people can fall into it because live betting is an action junkie's wet dream. You know, it's one of those things where there are so many betting opportunities that you can fall down a rabbit hole, all of a sudden find that you've got 10% of your bankroll on this game live, especially if you're enjoying a couple of beverages and whatnot. Be very careful. Be responsible with live betting. You know, it is something that can really put you in a tough spot, which is why I appreciate that Rich is trying to find, you know, comparisons from live betting to pregame closing lines and see if there's some value from that standpoint, kind of looking to quantify the live betting landscape. Hopefully you find something, but right off the top of my head, I can't really think of too much. One final question here, not really related to sports betting, but Tim via email says, what do you think of Bitcoin? It's coming to the bottom in the next few months, quarter two of 2019, and should go on a bull run in a year, quarter two, 2020. The next few months is a great time for listeners to cash out on some offshore sites and stash some Bitcoin. And I think there's a lot to this. You know, I've talked about how I believe cryptocurrency is the best way to fund and withdraw from the offshore sports books. And there are a lot of positive benefits and a lot of reasons why. And also, too, you know, with legalization sweeping across the country, we see a lot of bills being introduced in a lot of states right now. Now that their legislators are back in session, we're going to have a lot of votes here coming up in, you know, the month of November when we get to the election cycle. You probably won't have the need for offshores in a lot of states now. So, you know, why not take that money out? Maybe look to invest it in some cryptocurrency, something like that. Hope that those markets come back up as, you know, they're being forecasted to, as Tim mentions here. You know, it's a good way for you to have an investment, you know, a virtual investment while being able to do things, you know, at a brick and mortar sports book, get an app. A lot of states pushing apps now as well to go along with the brick and mortars because they want the action. They want as much tax revenue as they can possibly get. So a lot of people probably will be gravitating away from offshores to the brick and mortars. And, you know, if you don't need that money right away, maybe let it sit there in a Bitcoin wallet or something. I think that's a pretty thought there from Tim, and, you know, certainly something that I think you may want to consider. You know, as more and more states get legalized sports betting, more and more states introduce and pass the legislation, you may not need those offshores anymore. So maybe having that as some Bitcoin or something like that, not really a bad way to go about it. So appreciate the questions here. As always, adam@bangthebook.com via email or @skatingtripods on Twitter if you've got questions for the Monday mailbag.